Good morning. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti, and you're listening to The Current. Still to come, U.S. President Barack Obama is expected to take an inspirational tone tonight when he addresses Democrats. We'll ask how much different a dynamite speech can make. But first, this summer, an extraordinary verdict shone a light on one of Argentina's darkest hours. Two former top generals of the dictatorship were convicted of stealing the infants of political prisoners during the country's dirty war. Rafael Videla, who led the military during the 70s and the 80s, was sentenced to 50 years. Reynaldo Biñón received 15 years for the thefts. Both men are already serving life sentences for other crimes against humanity. But the convictions go a long way toward confirming the existence of a systematic kidnapping program, one that had been denied for decades. The Current's Kathleen Goldhar traveled to Buenos Aires this summer to talk to people about this shocking story of baby theft. She spent time with a woman who was stolen as a baby. Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi, Anna Maria.
And I'm so curious to find out about your discussions with this woman, but remind us first a little bit about the politics, the environment in which this was happening. What was going on in Argentina?
Well, as you said, these years were known as the dirty wars in Argentina. They began in 1976 and continued all the way through 1983. It was a period of state-sponsored terrorism that saw thousands of people killed, kidnapped, and tortured. The number of people who've been killed or disappeared, as they're known in Argentina, are estimated anywhere from 9,000 to over 30,000 people. And it was in this climate that it's alleged that up to 500 children were born to these disappeared women and were given to families friendly to the military.
They took that many, hundreds, as many as 500?
Hundreds.
Wow. How much do we know about what has happened to those kids? Where are they now?
Well, that's interesting because really we simply don't know. A well-known group in Argentina called the Abuelas de Playa de Mayo, basically the grandmothers of the Playa de Mayo, have been searching for decades for their children who disappeared during the war. And now they're working to identify the children of their children.
So I guess these kids, the grandkids essentially, the disappeared grandkids would be what? Around in their 30s now.
In their 30s, you know, heading into their 40s. And the grandmothers say that they have found 105 of these stolen children since Argentina's return to democracy in 1986. Presumably, the rest of the stolen children are living unaware of their true backgrounds or maybe even unwilling to find out.
It's only been lately that they've even been able to identify them, though. How come it's taken so long?
Well, yeah, it has taken years. And for a long time, it was almost impossible to match them to their disappeared children. But a lot of things have changed over the past 10 years, really. One, there's significant government support for this kind of work. There have been advancements in forensic technology, and there's a growing DNA database, which is run by the abuelas, the grandmothers, that have really helped in these cases.
You know, I can't even imagine what it must be like for someone who's a stolen baby as an adult to discover that their entire life has been based on a lie.
Absolutely horrible. I mean, to learn that the people who raised you were actually complicit in your parents' death, it's like having the ground ripped out from beneath your feet. Those who have found out say that the process of coming to terms with their true identity is long and torturous.
So in your documentary, Kathleen, you follow the story of one woman. Who is she?
Her name is Victoria Montenegro. She's 33 years old and the mother of three. But she wasn't always known as Victoria Montenegro. For decades, the only name she ever knew was Maria Sol. It was the name she grew up with. It was the one she identified with. But that was before learning that she was one of the hundreds of babies who were stolen in Argentina.
I can't even imagine everything she's struggling with.
She is struggling with a really profound dilemma, and that is what to feel about the people she thought were her real parents.
And that is why this story is part of our project this season, Line in the Sand, looking at the many dimensions of ethical dilemmas and how people deal with them all. Let's listen to Kathleen Goldhar's documentary. This is Becoming Victoria.
As more time passes since recovering my true identity, it is hard to understand if it was a normal childhood.
Victoria Montenegro meets me at the offices of the Abuelas de Playa de Mayo in Buenos Aires, Argentina, the grandmothers who relentlessly search for victims of Argentina's dirty war. On the walls, posters of the missing or disappeared, hundreds of black and white photographs, faces of men, women, and children, happy, smiling faces, pictures taken in better times, before the infamous green Ford Falcons, the car of Argentina's junta, pulled up outside their homes in the middle of the night, before military men burst into their houses, ransacked their rooms, and took them away to illegal torture chambers. For most of Victoria's life, though, she believed those stories were just that, stories.
Siempre dicen, Dios, patria y hogar, ¿no?
They always said, God, country, and home. And they spoke about how important this was and the importance of the fight against the subversives, and all the time they were pounding me with this ideology.
Victoria grew up in a military family. The man who raised her, Herman Tetzlaff, stood over 6 feet tall, weighed more than 300 pounds, and would spend hours lecturing his family at the dinner table, slamming his gun down to make his points, an imposing figure for anyone, but especially Victoria, who's a small woman with dark, sleepy eyes and a shock of black, wavy hair.
He was the intelligence chief of the North Zone. He was a lieutenant colonel in the army. He was the head of the task force at the Rosubio, a clandestine detention center. He carried out military intelligence at the detention centers that held kidnapped people. Kids.
Herman Tetzlaff led raids and admitted to killing and torturing those he called subversives. He spoke to his family about the need to suppress the terrorists and the communists who were threatening to destroy Argentina. Victoria says her entire worldview was shaped by Tetzlaff's ideology.
Because of my upbringing, I believed that it was all political, that it was a political move of the left to persecute members of the armed forces. I didn't even believe at all that there were any children of the disappeared.
Here, in the heart of Buenos Aires, the Abuelos de Playa de Mayo and their loyal supporters still march every Thursday afternoon. After the military was ousted, the grandmothers began the painstaking work of searching for the children of their disappeared daughters. And in doing so, they doggedly pursued men like Tetzlaff. So when the first accusations of child abduction were leveled against Tetzlaff in the 1980s, Victoria shrugged off the allegations.
I didn't think it was real. I thought it was only motivated by political causes and reasons. When the case started, they asked for me to give blood. I accepted because it was a way to protect my appropriator. If I didn't give blood, then they would say that we didn't collaborate with justice. But when I gave blood, it was just like running an errand. I had no idea that it was true that there were children of the disappeared and I could be one of them.
Tests prove that Tetzlaff and his wife, Maria del Carmen Eduardes, were not Victoria's biological parents. Victoria was 21 years old. Tetzlaff was arrested, jailed, and eventually convicted of stealing Victoria when she was a baby.
When they arrested him in 1997, I only knew that I was not their biological daughter, that's it. But it was not proved that I was a child of the disappeared, and the only thing that was important to me was that he recovered his liberty, which was part of my upbringing, to be loyal. He never explained it, because it was all wrapped up in politics. The line was the same, that I was their daughter, and everything that was happening was totally political, that the tests were manipulated.
After about a year and a half in prison, Tetzlaff fell ill and was released to a military hospital. Victoria faithfully visited him weekly until he died in 2003. During this time, Victoria's true identity and Tetzlaff's role were slowly and painfully being uncovered.
Conquering nations, conquering tribes, have always tried, and this is possibly what was going on here, have always tried to turn babies into their people. I'm Robert Cox, and I was for 20 years, I worked here on the Buenos Aires Herald. The last 10 years, I was the editor of the paper. That is during the times that are now sort of referred to as the Dirty War.
The Buenos Aires Herald was the only paper in the country reporting on the disappearances.
There was this terrible silence in Argentina. The press was completely cowed or accomplices to the military.
Today, though, plenty of ink has been used to describe the high-ranking military men who abducted babies. Last year, Robert Cox testified at the sensational trial of Rafael Videla. Videla, along with another former general, were convicted in July of stealing babies. Vindication for those who had always maintained that there had been a systematic effort to steal babies in Argentina. Some of the babies were taken from mothers who were prisoners and had their children in illegal torture chambers. Other children were stolen when their parents disappeared.
Honestly, I mean, to give evidence in that way, and you think to yourself, how can somebody, any human being, do what they did? Which is, these young women, pregnant, and they treated appallingly. In some cases, there's rape, torture always. And these women were allowed to give birth in appalling conditions in some time. They're in the worst of them all. The ESMA torture center and death camp, they set up I've seen what it was. I mean, a rudimentary sort of maternity because they had so many there. And then afterwards, the women were killed, usually by being flown out unconscious. They were given an injection and flown out over the Atlantic in military planes and dropped naked into the, where of course they died, but they were thrown out live. To think that somebody could do that. And then, why they then decided, in a way, an even worse crime, that they would strip these babies of their identities and give them to families who they considered to be good families, mostly military families or police families, anything like that.
Those were some of the stories Robert Cox wrote about in the Buenos Aires Herald.
We realized very early on that it was possible to save lives, particularly children. And we managed, if we could get the story out, and if we could get photographs of the missing children, I used to put it on the front page. And the military would surface them. In one case, they left the whole family on the steps of a hospital.
Robert Cox was somewhat protected. He wasn't an Argentine citizen. Rather, he was British. But his luck only lasted so long.
We had to leave at the end of 79 when the threats got to my family. We had a death threat to my 11-year-old son.
A few years ago, Robert Cox began returning to Buenos Aires to live a few months a year.
So most of what I learned about Tesleff was afterwards. What I've learned since is that the colonel was the man who did a large amount of deciding where the babies would go. He himself adopted one of these children.
That was Victoria. Tetzlev renamed her Maria Sol. She was 4 months old. And for the next 2 decades, through marriage and the birth of 3 boys, she was Maria Sol. But then in 2000, Victoria was informed that after more DNA testing, she was indeed the daughter of the disappeared. And it was only after that that Tetzlev finally admitted what he'd done.
Since the justice system proved that I am a daughter of the disappeared, and through other confessions he and others made that a military operation took place at my house, he admitted that he had taken me.
The colonel chose a bustling restaurant in Buenos Aires to tell Victoria about his role in her abduction.
We were having dinner, and he basically said that he had been the head of the operation and that he had entered our house to carry out the operation. But he was a military man. What more could be expected? He was a colonel. He wasn't a poet. He simply said, I did it, and that was that.
An end to the denials, but the beginning of a tumultuous time for Victoria.
You have to understand, this was part of the systematic plan. My parents, my appropriators, were scared. They believed that we were genetically subversives, so they had to be always aware that this didn't wake up, and they had to form us indoctrinate us so that this gene didn't sprout and turn us into subversives, militants, politicos, this gene that we inherited from our birth parents. I felt ashamed in 2000 that I was the daughter of the subversion. I didn't have the capacity to humanize the other, not even my parents. Political was a bad word in my upbringing. It was hard to humanize them.
But slowly, as Victoria learned more about her real family, her shame gave way to other emotions.
Mi papá se llamaba Roque Orlando Montenegro y mi mamá Hilda Torres.
My father was Roque Orlando Montenegro and my mother was Hilda Torres. I was born in Buenos Aires, in the Israelita hospital, but my parents were from Salta. I was born here when they came here because they were victims of repression. Like most people in the north of the country, they got involved in the creation of the ERP, People's Revolutionary Army, and the PRT, Workers' Revolutionary Party. They were very young, very committed, very intelligent, bright, mature, and passionate about their militancy. They were only 15 years old when they started getting involved.
But Victoria's parents' passion and commitment to opposing Argentina's junta brought them dangerous attention.
It is very hard to know what exactly happens in the raids. There is no way to know step by step what happened. I know that my parents were in Campo de Mayo, but I don't know where I was. After that, we don't know anything, really.
What Victoria does know is where, for her father, it all ended.
I know the final destination because the forensics team could identify his remains, which leads us to confirm that he was a victim of the death flights.
The death flight. Victims were put on a plane. Then they were pushed to their death over the Rio de la Plata. In May 2012, Victoria's father's remains were discovered in a grave with five other people, all of whom had washed onto the shores of neighboring Uruguay. The grave was marked NN for unknown name. There is still no information about her mother's fate.
I am piecing together all of this recovery of my identity through what people tell me. My father was dark-skinned and my mother was blonde with blue eyes. I look like my father. I am dark-skinned. Thanks to the stories of my family and the friends of my parents, I could come to understand who my mother was. In her character, my mother was very strong. She imposed on people even though she was so small and young. This made it possible to see things of my mother in me for the first time.
As her parents became more and more real, Maria Sol began the process of becoming Victoria, the name her real parents had given her. It didn't happen quickly. She first appeared as Victoria as a witness in the Rafael Videla trial.
It was liberating. I gave testimony in the case pertaining to the systematic plan to kidnap babies. It is a way, above all, to show them that despite everything that they did, they didn't win. They didn't beat us because we have recovered our identities. It's not over yet. Many still need to recover their identities. We are still looking. We have our real names and the memories of our real parents.
Con la memoria viva de nuestros padres.
With little to go on, a real name and some stories of the parents she never knew, Victoria struggles to make sense of who she is and how to proceed with her life.
It is impossible to erase 25 years of your life so that nothing is left.
Y no quede nada.
Victoria grew up with an older sister who now has a son.
Tengo una hermana, tengo sobrinos a los que quiero mucho.
I also have a sister and nephews who I love a lot. Of all that was obscure, like the violent messages and the ugly situations, I try to forget them and remember the good and the affection of my sister and my nephews now. But it is hard. Obviously, things remain.
Part of the process of becoming Victoria is getting to know her family in Salta, Argentina. Last January, Victoria went back to Salta to celebrate her real birthday with her father's family.
Mi familia biológica, gente muy buena.
My biological family, they are very good people. They always have loved me. The first time I traveled to Salta, I felt that it had been a long time since I had gone home. It didn't feel strange. That's because I had been incorporated into their lives. They knew when I was born. They celebrated my birthday every year. They knew I was somewhere, but not where. They waited for me. They understood and let me go through the entire process, and they respected my link with my appropriators, the affection. This helped me in finally recovering my identity. There is no specific date, no moment. But since the end of 2008, I started presenting myself as Victoria, because until then I had been presenting myself as Maria Sol and signing my name as Maria Sol, even though I had a new identification document with the name Victoria. From 2008, I started accepting my parents, to love them, to be proud of them and their militancy, and to accept myself as their daughter and to start using my name as Victoria and to start living my real life for which my real parents had brought me into this world.
Como Victoria, empezar a vivir con mi verdadera vida, no con la vida para la cual mis papás me trajeron al mundo.
Part of that acceptance has meant finding, perhaps incredibly, some peace with the past and the people who stole her for their own.
No, yo no odio a nadie.
I don't hate anybody. Nobody. What happened to me wasn't good. It wasn't correct. It wasn't an adoption. It was an appropriation. All of this in the framework of something so horrible in our country, of the deprivation of what was the appropriation of babies. I celebrate that now I can know who were my real parents, that I can live my real life. But I am not a psychologist. I am not a judge. Nor do I want to dig deeper into this. This is what I had to live. And I will move forward as best as I can with the least pain as possible. You have to be sincere with your own feelings to be able to build your life, yourself, your identity. Despite all of this, I cannot stop loving them. It is what befell me to live. I cannot stop loving them. He died, and my appropriated mother died a few months ago. I took care of them, always. I think I did what any good person would do, to take care of people when they are sick. This is not because they raised me with enormous love, but because my real parents brought me into this life with enormous love. These things don't have to do with upbringing, but with the essence of ourselves, of our blood. And this gives me the possibility to not hate them, but to love them in spite of everything.
Nuestra, ¿no? Un amor que llevamos en la sangre y que te da esta posibilidad de, a pesar de todo esto, no odiar y seguir queriendo.
We have been listening to the documentary Becoming Victoria, produced by The Current's Kathleen Goldhar. Next up, U.S. President Barack Obama is expected to make exceptional use of language when he speaks at the Democratic Convention tonight. We'll be speaking to some of the most qualified wordsmiths in the U.S. about that. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. This is The Current.